Broadsheet Radio Network.
Shared history.
Save history. Live better.
Oh. Yeah. Let's also save future, please. Please.
Save history, save future.
Send I feel help. Like,
please help. I feel like if we keep doing what we're doing, Natalie, again, we're saving history.
It is true. We're saving it by sharing it.
And the only way you can't repeat history is...
to share the fuck out.
You know it. Those who don't do history are doomed to redo it. That's mm-hmm. how it goes?
That's how it yeah. goes.
So save it and live better.
Yeah. Everyone, save it.
And we're here to save you today. I'm going to dive right in. I got a great topic, Nat.
I'm ready.
Are you?
I'm. You know what? Thank you for asking. Give me a second. Okay. Red leather, yellow leather.
All right. Well, I am here to talk to you about the sports.
Wow, a shock.
Yeah, yeah.
A shock to the system.
Probably one of your favorites. Have you heard of the CHL?
No. Is it a hockey league?
It is. Okay. It is a hockey league. Look at you putting those letters together.
I mean, what other sport has an A starts with an H?
Many
it was
people
really just critical thinking skill.
I wouldn't have picked it up. Many people who hear CHL might think the Canadian Hockey League, but they would be wrong. Kind of. It actually stands for the Colored Hockey League or the Colored Hockey League of the Maritimes.
Ooh, I love the Maritimes.
Get this. So the first professional hockey league in the world happened in Nova Scotia, Canada, and it was a group of 7 or 8 black teams. What year do you think this was in?
Oh man, we've been hitting things with sticks for a while. So but then I'm like, then you go
all black Nova Scotia.
Yeah. Ooh. I'm going to go against my instinct and I'm going to say the 20s.
What was your instinct? Basically
older.
Older is right. 1895, the Colored Hockey League was founded. Now, any sort of professional hockey league outside of that, namely the NHL or the NHA, which preceded it, didn't start till 1907 and 1909 respectively.
Okay.
So this predated any professional hockey league. There was an amateur league going on in Canada, but that was still after this. So I heard about the Colored Hockey League from, was it Greer Barnes? It wasn't Greer Barnes. Godfrey, some comedian. And they were joking about how there's no black people that play hockey and just riffing on that. And he was like, no, that's not true. White people broke the color barrier in hockey because professional hockey started with all black players. So in Nova Scotia, Halifax in 1895, a group of 4 Baptist ministers, Pastor James Borden, James A.R. Kinney, and James Robinson Johnson, and Henry Sylvester Williams. I said 4. That's 4. I said and too soon. So they were 4 Baptist ministers and leaders in their church and communities, and they thought they wanted to make sure, the men in their communities were staying, kind of above board. They wanted to keep them out of trouble. They wanted to instill good leadership values, organization, all of these if you think of like Ron Swanson's hierarchy of success, or like any motivational sports poster you've seen in like a gymnasium, where it's like, we learn the doctrines of leadership and togetherness and teamwork. Take any sports buzzword, and that's what they wanted to instill. So they thought they would make a hockey league. And hockey's been around forever. I'm not saying these guys invented hockey, but they organized it first. So they
But
had,
before them, people were just all hitting things with sticks. And then
I
they were
mean,
like, we've got
people,
league rules and we've got standards now.
yes, we got teams and we've got a championship.
Nice.
So, they had at its highest point, they had teams in seven communities in Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Islands, upward of a dozen teams, and over 400 black players, black Canadian players that would play in this league. And they invented stuff which, like, doesn't really mean anything to me because, again, not a hockey person, but like, one of the players invented the slap shot, Eddie Martin of the Halifax Eureka.
I mean, you know what a slap shot is.
I mean, I know what a slap shot is, but like, there's another rule that's like, so goaltender, goaltenders, sorry, it's goaltenders in hockey. Goaltenders always had to have both skates, both feet on the ground, when goaltending, and it was.
To be fair, when you have knives attached to the bottom of your feet, because this is Canada, so I'm assuming it's ice hockey.
Yeah, sorry, yes, this is ice hockey. When you have knives to the end of your
Am
feet.
I wrong?
Yeah, it, you know what? I'm not gonna lie. That's not a bad rule. Keeping your knives on the ground.
Keep your knives on the ground. Knives down, not knives out, knives down.
So, knives on the ground. But he was the first one to do what they call like the butterfly, whatever. It's when the goalkeepers just like splay their legs out and collapse onto the puck. First guy to do that. And once the NHL was created about 10 years later, that was like law. Like, yeah, goalkeepers, fuck the knives, do whatever you want with them.
Goaltenders are insanely flexible.
Oh my
I mean, hockey
God.
players in general, very flexible. I'm not telling anyone who spends too much time on TikTok anything new, but mostly because of book talk, because for some reason there's a lot of sports romances that are hockey centric.
Really?
Oh, so many.
Wait, books or
Yes.
movies? Oh, okay. I was like, all I know is the cutting edge.
I mean, and what else do you need? The cutting edge and Blades of Glory. What else is there? But yeah, there's a ton of TikToks that are just of professional hockey players like stretching or like doing their warm-ups on the ice, and it's mostly just fucking the ice. It's so much just like grinding to flex to like stretch out their groin. I'm not making this up. There's the Seattle Kraken especially, their entire I think their like bio on TikTok is Mo is it just says mostly book talk because they're book talk's favorite team. Because their social media is just so on point that they're like they know what they're doing. They
That's so funny. Do you know why
understand
their
the
social
assignment.
media is on point? Because they've only been a team for like 3 years. They
Yeah.
were an expansion. I only know that because I have a friend who's like, his team is the Seattle Kraken. I'm like, okay, whatever. So random and weird.
This isn't about how flexible hockey players are, though.
No, it's not. It should be, but it's not. So yeah, so the first ever league game was played on February 27th, 1895, at the Dartmouth Curling Rink. It was the Eurekas versus the Jubilees, and they skated to a 1-1 tie. It says that it was started as a means for black communities to get together, to lift each other up. It said, I've seen some articles that said that the pastors who started it wanted to, and I think it's just worded weird, or maybe it was worded from their time, lift black men up to the standard of their white counterparts. I think what they were trying to say is to prove that you're not less than. Let's get you on a rank. Let's show you all of these different capabilities that you have that we can bring out, that everyone can bring out these capabilities through sports and athletics. So like when I read it, I was like, ugh. But also, like, I think it was just written at a time where it didn't sound nice. But they did, and they excelled, and on and off the ice. They clearly invented rules of the game, or at least standards that we still play by today. There were mixed audiences that came. It got so big, it wasn't just black people going to watch these black hockey players, it was Canadians coming to see great hockey. They drew huge crowds. They had reporters and journalists from all over come. And then they said that all throughout the first season, ladies would turn out in full force for the games, cheering loudly. So, like, they had a following. There were no nets. Curling stones were used as posts. I found his name. Okay. Jubilee star Henry Braces Franklin was an ice cutter by trade.
Okay.
And he was the one who reportedly like revolutionized the goaltending position because he would dive and slide to make saves on the ground. So in 1958, Willie O'Ree is credited with quote unquote breaking the color barrier. He was the first black hockey player to play in the NHL for the Boston Bruins. But it's just not true.
Are you peddling lies?
Hockey's history is based around black athletes. Also in 1895, you're probably wondering, like, what are all these black people doing in Canada? Well, slavery. I mean, oh, sorry. In the Maritimes, because again, the league is called the Colored Hockey League of the Maritimes. So the Maritimes are all of those eastern islands, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, New Brunswick, all of those icy places. Everyone who was in this league was one or two generations removed from their ancestors in slavery. So they all went north and settled, and they called it Africville or Africaville. So all of these people settled in this whole area, which again is another reason why pastors from different parishes wanted to bring each other together. You know, if you're stolen from Africa in an arid desert climate, brought over to America and run away to the tundra, you know, you're going to draw together to find the people that a community of like-minded people and help get us through this fucking barren winter. So they had this big community there that's kind of not talked about and untold, and they modernized and created hockey into what it is today. And we kind of shit on that by saying, oh, the first black hockey player happened in 1958.
Like, no, man, of your league, of your racist exclusionary read
Yes.
league.
And after 1958, there was not another black hockey player in the NHL until the 74-75 season with 19-year-old rookie Mike Marcin. So more and more black athletes are getting into hockey, playing hockey, succeeding in hockey. It is still a very marginalized group, and a lot of it is played on this myth or this punchline of, black people don't play hockey. It's similar to, what is it, like the Howard men's swim team who's won a national championship, and they're kind of doing that all in the face of that
Black
myth
people can't
punchline
swim.
joke of black people can't swim. They're like, okay, well, we can, and we just won a national championship.
It's also that hockey became, because it's this gear heavy sport, it's an equipment heavy sport, it is cost prohibitive to play. Like the barrier of entry for even taking a class, because it's not like soccer or like baseball where it's like, okay, yeah, we could just like go in somebody's backyard and toss around a ball, kick around a ball, like drill together, play together with not, we don't need like tons of equipment. We don't need to like,
Unless we have a well, like a good pond
yeah,
and, you
unless
know,
you're living in a very
space.
specific space that's going to have a solid enough frozen pond consistently enough. So someplace like Nova Scotia, you have to, and this is also like what hockey and figure skating too have become. They were not always this, but it became like, oh, you want ice time, you have to go to this club that has an astronomical membership fee, or only
Or
has like
pray for a free skate.
limited free skate options. I mean, even in the, this is not the same thing, but even in the city of Chicago, like we used to live like right by one of the public pools, and there the your windows of free swim are very small.
Oh,
There's
yeah.
like a couple hours throughout the entire week that are free, that are adult free swim, that are family free swim, etc. And then add on to that the fact that you have to buy knife shoes and pads to protect
Hereby,
you from knife shoes.
can we like see if we can patent and make this a thing? We are no longer peddling skates. We are peddling knife shoes, and I will not call them the S word ever again. They are
Shouldn't,
knife
actually,
shoes.
honestly, more like knife boots. I don't know which is better, but they are more of
You
a
know
knife.
what? Knife shoes sounds unsafe.
Yeah,
Knife
you need the ankle
boots?
support of knife boots.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not worried about sharpness. I'm worried about ankle support
I'm worried
here.
about my ankles, my pinkies.
I had never heard of it before, and it was really interesting that I just listened to an interview of comedians riffing, and this guy was like, "I know you're laughing, but also like black people do play hockey," and boom, history, 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 history.
Love any time in any, like, I feel like especially in comedy and in music, which I feel like are avenues of the arts that you don't expect people to like educate you.
Yes.
But when somebody just starts dropping random knowledge, and especially if it's history, because of course I'm myself and I'm very biased, I'll be like, I'm sorry, what was that? What was that song lyric about? I'm gonna look that up.
Do you know what I fucking hate? Is from the history of the world, educators have been artists.
Oh, yeah.
Educators have been singers, painters, artists, you know, free thinkers. And it's only now. Like, I hate when you're like, "Well, you're just a comedian. Stop doing political stuff." It's like, first of all, that's what satire is. Satire came from politicians, and, you know, artists are fucking Plato and all the Greeks, and everyone did everything. And so I hate when people are like, "Well, you're just a singer, stick to your lane," or whatever. It's like, I'm gonna stick to my lane and do exactly what I'm still doing.
Yeah. I also feel like artists are historically, and maybe not so much now because again, it became too expensive and art became like an underpaid, what are you doing with your life profession. But historically, artists traveled the most. Artists had like you traveled, I feel like once like travel lanes opened up, going as far back as, you know, our good old Silk Road.
Gotta love that Silk
Gotta love that
Road.
Silk Road. But it's like the second people started traveling more, they traveled for art or war. Like, we're either traveling to discover things and to learn, gain new experiences and like bring our art elsewhere or learn from other artists, or we're traveling to like conquer shit. One of these is a more noble course.
And while we're conquering shit, I'm gonna need you to cast a sculpture of me, artist. So artists are going there too. Sing the songs, all that. Yeah, I mean, artists, like the not economics, what's the, I don't know. The model of artistry was patronage. So you study your ass off, you get good at what you do, and then people pay to send you all over. You're Taylor Swift. You're Taylor Swift. They're gonna pay to send you everywhere, do all the cool things. So you just hush your mouth, people.
You know what? I'm calling an audible right now. I'm going to tell you a different story.
Oh, what?
Because it just feels like it fits nicely with this conversation we're having.
Nat,
So.
I think this is our first true audible on the fly. Because you've texted me before, you're like, it's between one or two. What do you think? Okay, I'm going to go with this one, like right before we start recording. I don't think any of us have ever switched mid-recording. I love this. It's history in the making.
I just feel like it dovetails nicely into our co conversation about art and just our conversation about like people thinking that people aren't do like a group of people aren't doing a thing that they are doing and they're doing very well.
Oh my God, tell me more.
So when we talked about the Columbian Exposition,
Oh
or
God. Oh, I
World's
forgot you
Fair,
have to do Chicago.
1893 World's Fair, with Jim Fazella, we talked about architect Daniel Burnham. Daddy of Chicago, Daniel Burnham. And we talked about landscape architect, or at least we probably did, Frederick Law Olmsted. I don't think we talked about Laredo Taft. And frankly, I'm not going to talk about Laredo Taft. I just need to use him to back into this. So if you grew up in Illinois, there's a chance that you only know Laredo Taft as like this. Like campgrounds. There's a campground called Laredo Taft that we went to in like fifth grade for a weekend. It's like a big field trip event thing that like the fifth graders got to do, and it's very cool. And I could talk about just that, and then but that would turn into me talking about things that No Child Left Behind killed,
Oh
which
no.
is all cross-curricular learning, and that's not what we're here for. But that's what I know Laredo Taft for. I know that he was an artist. He's a sculptor. And like we said, like we were just saying, artists tend to be teachers. He was also an educator, and a pretty cool dude. I don't know. I don't have a source for that. I'm just saying he's a distant relative. He is a distant relative of President Taft. Where the name Laredo came from, no idea. Didn't look into that, but have. That's one of those things that it's
Sounds
like,
like a city in Tuscany.
right? And it's one of those things that where every time I think about Laredo Taft, I'm like, I should look up what the hell that name is. Never
How
do.
often do you think about Laredo Taff?
Look, I peaked in high school. Fifth grade was great too. I think of that. I think of that weekend fondly. Yeah, he's a distant relative of President Taft. His daughter, Emily Taft Douglas, was the first female Democrat elected to Congress. Fun facts. Yeah. I think her husband was also maybe a politician. Doesn't matter. It's not about either of them. And his work is all over Illinois and Chicago. It's all over everywhere. I know a lot of the Illinois works. He grew up around Champaign-Urbana. So if you're familiar with the alma mater statue on U of I's campus, that's his. There's this wonderfully spooky sculpture in Chicago's Graceland Cemetery called Eternal Silence that is
Ugh.
his. It's wonderfully just like it is cemetery realness. It serves graveyard in the greatest way. The Eternal Indian, right? Isn't it so spooky ooky? I love it. It's
Oh
like a
my
little goth
God.
queen's dream. I'll post a picture. I'll post a link to it in the. I'm gonna make a note to do
Natalie, why are you scaring me again? This
It's
is going
not
to give
about the
me
scary.
nightmares.
Look, I could talk about violence or art. Those are Chicago's exports.
I thought you said you weren't going to talk about Laredo at all.
I'm getting there. I just
get
I
it done to, with it.
I want to give people context if they know his work.
Okay, all right.
The Eternal Indian or the Black Hawk statue at Loudoun State Park, which is by Laredo Taft, I think, like the campground Laredo Taft.
Is that where the team name came from?
Monument in the Chicago Loop is his. So those are just ones in Illinois. He's got shit all over the country. He studied in Paris because obviously everyone did after getting his master's. And then when he returns to the United States, he settles in Chicago, which is what makes him relevant to this story. He taught at the University of Chicago and at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, which has been around for a long, long time. So we're in the late 1800s. Remember, this is just before the Chicago World's Fair, which is 1893. That Columbian Exposition, it is on the horizon. The art community, I mean, the whole city is in a tizzy of like, how are we going to finish all of these things? We won this bid for the city. We have all these things we have to get done before we're ready. The art community especially. And Taft has been brought on by Burnham to design, consult, coordinate, etc., his White City. Not the buildings, but those buildings all had like gorgeous sculpted facades, like over the entryway. Mm. There were fountains. There were like parkways just lined with sculptures.
The garnish.
Yes. Yes. Really what made the exhibits come alive, gave you something to look at other than like Pabst Blue Ribbon's Blue Ribbon. So the White City is being built for the fair. There's all these sculptural adornments. And Burnham is like, are we going to finish these? And Taft is like, it's cool, dude. I've got oodles of talented students and friends. With their assistance, we can get it done. Oh, shit. All of the men that I would hire to assist me are already employed. But at this time, women assistants are almost completely unheard of. Now, Taft, this isn't revolutionary for Taft. Taft has a history of utilizing his female students because they could be in the school. There's nobody was hiring them as assistants.
Mm-hmm.
And Taft would regularly. So he's like, oh, all of my guys are busy. I wonder if they'll let me hire women because my female students are available and incredibly competent. So he asks Burnham if he can use women as assistants. And Burnham tells him, quote, hire anyone, even white rabbits, if they can get the work done. Which that brings me to what I thought of when you were talking about this that I actually want to tell you about. And that's the white rabbits, which are a group of, that's what they started to be known as. They are a group of Taft's female students and assistants who emerged as some of the most talented and successful women sculptors of the next generation.
Oh my God. Thanks, Laredo. Okay, I'll allow the sojourn to get to here.
Yeah, I feel like you need, also, otherwise I'm literally just going to be telling you, hey, there are a lot of women who did this. And I think that is what we said in that episode, that they're like, they, because they worked on the women's building.
Yeah.
And we talked about the women's building, especially that everything right. in the women's building was like built. It was designed by a woman. Everything was built by women. But the White Rabbits were responsible for most of the sculptures, most of the adornments in the World's Fair. Their work on the World's Fair was, I think, limited to sculpting, but a lot of them were also accomplished painters. A lot of them come from a family of artists or like raised artists that we know about from art history, or married other really accomplished artists, etc. So the women are Julia Bracken, Carol Brooks, Ellen Rankin Kopp, Helen Farmsworth, Margaret Giroux, Mary Lawrence, Bessie Potter, Janet Scudder, Enid Yandel, Jean Pond Minor Coburn, and Taft's own sister, Zulame Taft.
Zulame Taft.
Name. Ellen Rankin, won the first medal for sculpture ever awarded by the Art Institute of Chicago before the fair was even coming to town. So when I say that these are already accomplished artists in their own right, accomplished students, and it wasn't just like, let's throw these ladies a bone. It was Taft being like, we have to get this done. I know a large group of talented people, half of them,
half with dicks.
have jobs, and there's all this talent not being utilized. That's where it came from. It wasn't like he was throwing them a bone. They were paid $5 a day. That's $168 today.
I was gonna say that's pretty good.
And they were paid $7.50, which is about $250 today on Sundays. And they didn't design all of the sculptures. Most of the sculptures were sent to Chicago by artists all around the country, like small models of them were. And then the white rabbits turned them into full-scale sculptures to face the buildings of the fair. But they did get to contribute their own designs to the fair as well. They worked out of the horticulture building, which if I think was one of the like most adorned buildings. And other artists working at the fair would come eat their lunch watching the white rabbits work. It was a destination. They would like bring their lunches and just go watch and watch these women like work so efficiently and strategically and like art and artistically. And it was like before the fair even started, they were their own exhibit to the people working on the exhibits.
That's amazing.
Yeah. They worked on a bunch of their own. They got commissions from the fair. They got to work, add some of their own designs to the fair. I feel like Scudder and Yandell's career might be the most well known, and that might just be that Scudder might be the only one who wrote an autobiography, and we just know a lot about her. And also, she won a lot of medals for things, and also participated in a lot of expositions, like national and international expositions. Her probably one of her most famous works at the fair that was hers, her design, was the allegorical Female Justice that was a part of the Illinois building. I think she also did something because she's from Indiana originally. And I think she also did something for the Indiana building. Yes, she did. She did a sculpture called The Nymph of Wabash that was paid, the citizens of Terre Haute, Indiana paid $1,000. That's $33,000 today. That she did this building for the Indiana building, and they wanted it for the Terre Haute Library after the fair was over, so they like paid her a shitload of money. Taft's sister made Flying Victory and Learning. Bracken sculpted Faith. Brooks did Charity. Kopp made Maternity. And I don't know why it tickles me so much, but there is a sculpture that was just called Art, and that one was done by Potter. Bracken did the Illinois Greeting the Nations. Yandel did the, going back to the women's building that we talked about, the beautiful female figures that decorated the women's building. Those were Yandel's. And so was Daniel Boone, which I think was for the Kentucky building, because I think Daniel Boone's from Kentucky.
That checks out.
So their work is all over the fair, but also then all of that art went elsewhere afterwards. And also they were young student artists, still accomplished, but like they were still young when the fair happened. So then they went out and did art all over the place. The New York Times described Scudder as one of the foremost woman sculptors of America. Her, I think Justice, her sculpture Justice, part of the Illinois building at the fair, is what won her a bronze medal at the fair itself.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, she got paid the equivalent of $33,000 today for her other thing. She went on to contribute work for the Met, the Paris Exposition, the Pan American Exposition, the New York World's Fair, and several other national and international expositions. She commissioned multiple things for the for multiple Rockefellers. She also, back in the day when the Olympics had art as an event, like
wait, what?
The Olympics used to have art events.
What?
Mm-hmm. You didn't know this?
No.
Yeah, until like, I wonder. Let me check when it ended.
Like what kind of art?
Yeah, from 1912 to 1948, they had art competitions.
What?
Got medals and everything.
That's fucking cool. Why don't we do that anymore?
Maybe it stopped in 1954. Because artists at that point, well, because the Olympics are, and so this is funny for what we were just talking about, of people like poo-pooing art and not giving it like the respect that artists deserve. Part of the reason art, I think, was abandoned as an Olympic event is because the Olympic events are for amateurs and artists were considered professionals.
I love that. Wait, how come people from the NBA can play in the Olympics?
That is a, that's a sports question. I'm here to talk about female sculpture.
Okay, sorry. I often get those two subjects confused. So yeah, anyway.
They're very similar.
So close.
Wow! The reason I brought up the Olympics was Scudder won a medal for in the 1928 Summer Olympics for in the sculpture event. Or maybe she didn't win a medal, but she competed. And then, of course, because all of these women are also like active suffragettes. Suffragists. We don't need to gender that term.
Thank you.
A lot of them, this is 1893 that the World's Fair is. So a lot of them go on to like work.
2 years before the CHL was founded.
Mm-hmm. They go up to Nova Scotia. They do ice sculptures. No. They sculpt all the men in their knife shoes, in their knife boots. Scudder especially, like I said, she's just one of the ones we know the most about. She was an active relief worker and Red Cross volunteer during World War I. She, at this time, lived in, not in Paris, but in France. I can't remember where. She offered her home to the government in France to use as a hospital.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah, for her niceness and her volunteer work, she was named a Chevalier, a Knight of the French Legion, for all of her wartime service.
I didn't know they gave chevaliers out to women.
They gave one to Scudder.
Hell yeah, Scudder.
Yeah. I also just want to state that when she finally returned to America in 1939, she resided with her companion.
Oh, did she have a female roommate?
Mm-hmm. She had a close female companion and roommate, lawyer and author Marion Benedict Cawthron. I love historical roommates.
Just two close friends.
Just two gal pals making it in the world.
Y'all, we found a journal of hers when they were practicing kissing. Oh, it was so quaint how women used to do that all the time back then.
Mm-hmm. Just with their friends, their close confidants. She didn't have time for men. What with all the volunteering as a Red Cross worker? When would she have the opportunity to meet a man? What with volunteering with the army? And traveling the world as an artist.
Oh, God.
Yandel, are you familiar with the Nashville Parthenon?
Of Greece?
Nashville, Tennessee. There's a big ass.
Oh, Nashville. I thought you said national. I was like,
No. Like, what happens? No.
No.
Okay.
I'm not familiar.
Nashville is for some reason known as like the Athens of, I don't know, Tennessee. And there is in Nashville, or just outside, I think. In Tennessee, there is a Parthenon, a huge, I believe, full-size replica of the Parthenon, the Athens Parthenon. You can go visit it. It's there. I would tell you I would find a photo of me at it, but I don't want to make promises that my Dropbox can't keep. But it's there. You can still visit it today. Yandel was commissioned to create a massive sculpture of Athena for the 1897 Tennessee Centennial and International Exposition. This statue, I will put a link to a picture of this. Is this because there's a picture of her like next to it before it's fully assembled. So it's like Athena's like head is on the ground still, but her body's there. It was 40 feet tall.
Holy shit.
And
Natalie, aren't you 40 feet?
I'm 39 and a half.
Oh God. I always get that confused. You're tall.
Parthenon, this giant ass Parthenon was built as the exposition's fine arts building. And there is still an Athena statue that is at the Nashville, because it was like, they basically like took it down, moved it to Nashville, rebuilt it, shored it up, etc. So the Nashville Parthenon isn't exactly all of the same materials.
Mm-hmm.
And the Athena sculpture that is there is not Yandel's. Hers was made from staff, which is a non-permanent building material. Mm-hmm. So, and it was never cast. A lot of things that are made out of staff, if like everyone's like, this is amazing, they'll cast it in bronze.
Oh.
And they never cast her Athena in bronze, so it did not last more than a year.
Why didn't they cast it in bronze?
I don't know. I just didn't get around to it. It was on their to-do list. They had a lot going on. What was being the Athens
of Nashville? I always thought that was Dollywood.
Same. Well, that's the Sparta of Nashville. That's where the warriors come from. And a bunch of these women went on to form, like Farnsworth, for example, went on to form the California Art Club, which was developed on the premise of allowing women and sculptors into membership of this art club. I don't know why sculptors weren't historically allowed in other artist clubs in California, but I guess that implies that they weren't. And yeah. And I just love that they're called the White Rabbits. It took me like four times of reading Burnham's quote to understand that he was saying it is in the way of, because what, it's not a
like turn pulling of a white phrase. Rabbit out of a hat.
Well, it's not a turn of phrase to be like, hire whoever you want, even white rabbits. Like, that's not like Burnham thought he was so fetch.
Stop trying to make fetch work, Burnham.
But it took me like three times of reading that quote to be like, oh, he was basically saying like, I don't care if you hire like your dog. Like, I don't care who you hire if the work gets done. My dog is an accomplished sculptor.
He
What's
is.
Funny is that I did in one of my sources, I did see that Taft has noted, another student of Taft's has noted that in general, he did participate in the not uncommon occurrence of using his students' talents to further his own career, which arguably this was. He had a job to get done, and he was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to use all of the tools in my arsenal, which mm-hmm. are these incredibly talented women.
Yeah.
But in general, history has been pretty kind to him and credited him for helping to advance the status of women as sculptors. So props to him for
props
even
to
using
you,
his
Taft.
Female students to further his own career.
Yeah. Well, and if they were all men that had been used, no one would have been like, hey, he's just using those men.
Yeah. I wonder if
he was to get the fucking job done.
It sounds, it feels icky now when I think of it this way, but I wonder if as many people would have gone to watch the men work in the
horticulture
building.
Probably mostly because it was women.
Novelty.
Yeah. But I would have gone.
I'd have gone.
Natalie, remember a moon or two ago when I told you I was taking up whittling?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that didn't last very long.
You didn't take me a train whistle?
Toot toot. But I do follow so many like woodworking accounts just because watching them whittle is so soothing and satisfying. And now that has stretched into like masonry of these people with, you know, like hammer and chiseling out these like insane designs. It's phenomenal. It's amazing to watch. I would eat my lunch and watch people do that every damn day if I could.
Oh, yeah. And there's somebody on TikTok. I wish I knew their handle so I could shout them out properly. But they're speaking of just like things people are doing that I'll watch a video of. This woman is replacing, she's rebinding all of her books to match the Penguin cloth back classic series. You know the pretty ones where they have like the foil kind of like pattern on them.
Yeah. And
the cloth cover. She's rebinding all of the other books in her bookshelf to match those. And they're really fun to watch because I also enjoy the reveal of what the pattern on the cover is, because I think like
I'm gonna need you to send me those.
I next time one comes up, I will send it to you. Like Emma has by Jane Austen has like a chair on it for some reason, mm-hmm. and it's just like this chair print all over the cover. So for contemporary books to see, especially if it's one that I've read, and then so like I saw a video where she was rebinding Jurassic Park and The Lost World. And so one has like raptors on it, and one has like a T-Rex skeleton on it, and I'm like, oh, I'll watch this forever, because not only is it soothing to watch you do it, I also get a kick out of what you choose as the patterned paper on the inside of the cover and what pattern you choose for the exterior, which is like a fun little reveal.
I'm not a crafty person, but I'll be damned if I don't love a pure, perfectly curated, soothing crafting talk.
Mm-hmm. Especially because it moves at like 3x speed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. as to what it would be.
I'm not gonna wait around here forever.
I'm not gonna whittle this myself because I know how long it would take, but so I guess
wow.
That's my discovery, is this woman rebinding her.
That's a great discovery, and my discovery is go check out Masonry Talk. I don't know, I watch all of my TikTok on Instagram because I'm an old.
Go learn a trade. That's what we're saying. Our discovery, we're elder millennials, so our discovery is just TikTok. But on a 2-month delay on Instagram.
And I stick to it.
Cass, I have a question for you before we wrap this up. Since we're talking about the talks and the grams. Is there something that if it comes up, everyone will send to you?
Oh,
like is there like a trigger, like a TikTok trigger that you're like, well, if even if you see it on your own, you're like, everyone's gonna send this to me?
Yes. Yep. It is I don't understand why everyone keeps calling me Cassidy or Cassandra, whatever, when my name is actually Casserole.
Is that a lot of TikToks?
All the time. Or there's just like one that like a couple, but it like comes around every now and then. So every like few months, I'll just be getting like people who have either just met me, like, oh my God, Casserole. Blah, blah, blah. Or all of my friends who now call me Casserole, which is not a great nickname as a 33-year-old to have.
Yeah, but as a Midwesterner, it just
feels
right.
Perfect. My friend Maddie, who will be officiating my wedding, once our like wedding hashtag, because my fiance's name is Taylor, to be Taylor Tot Casserole.
Oh,
and I refuse.
I co-sign it. I'm a hashtag shit that
okay, but what about this one? What about this one? Taylor got cast away.
I don't know. I like Taylor Tot Casserole.
God damn it. That's what everyone keeps saying. I'm not doing it.
I mean, it's your wedding. Do what you want. Justin and I did an intentionally not clever hashtag, because I'm like, first of all, the clever ones are too easy. His last name is Younger. And I was like, the pressure as a professional writer is too high. I'm not doing this. So we didn't do a clever one. We did Young Mules. Like, it's not clever and it doesn't mean anything. It's just parts of our last names. Deal with it, guys. Everyone sends me anything that has anything to do with the Backstreet Boys. And then
you had to head people off this past week, where you just went and posted something on your Insta story and you're like, before everyone sends me this.
Because I'm like the second, because I saw it on TikTok, which means that in 2 months, whenever when all of my friends see it on Instagram, my sister, bless her heart, immediately texted, like responded to it and went, "I hadn't seen this yet." And I was like, "Yes, Kathleen, because it's not on Instagram yet. Maybe it is, but I saw it on TikTok, so I headed everyone off at the pass, like the Huns." And then, and then also the amount of times, and it never stops. I still get this one probably every other week. I made a temperature blanket
The
for,
poop one?
and everyone sends me the poop one.
Yep.
Everyone, because they're
I
like
think I've
Natalie
sent you the poop
crochets,
one.
and Natalie made a temperature blanket. The amount of times I've been sent the same shit blanket, which the first time I got it, I giggled, and now it's just like, guys, like that video's so old.
I think I sent that to you like a year ago, and I think I've sent it a couple times because I've forgotten that I sent it. Like, oh, Natalie needs, and I think I did it recently where I'm like, I'm pretty sure I sent this to her, and if I haven't, I know someone has. I'm not going to send it again.
Let it be known, Cass doesn't need any more of your casserole talks, and I don't need any more of your shit
Shit
blanket.
talks. No more shit talk.
But I'm glad we started talking about sports, and it like inspired me to talk about art. I don't want to talk about the fact that you told me a story about the Colored Hockey League, and I told you a story about the White Rabbits.
Oh
I don't want to touch that.
we'll stay away from that, but we will talk about giving people credit where credit's due.
Yeah. Talk about little pioneers of their fields,
Yes.
talented human beings who deserve credit. And we've mentioned a lot of visual shit, so also I have to link to the entire Seattle Kraken TikTok page. So there'll be a lot of links below in the show notes, as always. A couple visual aids over on Shared Pod as well, at Shared Pod on the gram. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, listen, guys, there's only so much more Chicago history for me to cover. So if you have requests,
Get them in now,
send them
because
over.
Nat, I haven't told you this, Natalie, yet. No Chicago history at all next season.
Ouch.
I just came up with that just now. You got oops, all Chicago this whole season? None. And
This is
if
rude.
somehow something accidentally spins around back to Chicago, you don't realize it until, like, oh, this made a connection. You have to take a shot on air.
As somebody with big
Chicago energy.
Chicago energy, I was going to say big, good student PM energy. This upsets me because I will honor it and I will get upset. We're gonna need to like a signal for if or some pen punishment if a guest's topic that is not Chicago related makes me go hee.
That's why I said that, because God, we'll be talking about whatever. You'll be like, how many times have we talked about, well, we've talked about Jim Fizzell and the Chicago Exposition because it's been an oops all Chicago season, but like it comes up a lot accidentally.
Well, because it was a crossroads of all the things, and intentionally, that's what it was by design. So it just so happened that also, like, a lot of murder happened, and
Natalie, if I challenged you to TED Talk and your TED Talk was about why the history of Chicago is insignificant in the grand scheme of the world, what would you do?
cry.
Okay, yep, that's it. Just cry.
Weep softly to myself, but complete the assignment because
Yes, that's
I need to pass this class. I can't, I honestly, my GPA could probably take the hit, but I don't want to risk it. I don't want to disappoint my teachers.
Yeah, Natalie, you have been graded on this entire series.
If that's the case, I'm gonna get a D for pronunciation, basically. But
Well, again, friends, our socials are at SharedPod on everything. Email us at SharedPodcast@gmail.com.
Podcast@gmail.com.
Fantasypodcast@gmail. Talk to us, DM us, friend us.
Yeah, we love
follow,
you.
Follow, subscribe, heart, double click, do all the things.
Oh,
give us some reviews.
Yes, I didn't tell you this. Somebody messaged us, DM'd us on Instagram because they are related to Hannah Duston, Dr. Emily Romeo's story from like season 2.
No way! How are they related?
Oh, I would have to dig up the DM. It was a lovely DM. I went back and forth with them a couple times. They were very grateful about the they were very kind and very grateful about the topic. So please DM us. It makes me really happy.
Oh, that's amazing. Actually, we've had, is that now three?
Two relatives?
Three relatives. Sam,
yes, our friend Sam, Alex Di Virgilio's girlfriend, Sam, who we've mentioned on this season before. I think I shouted her out earlier this season.
Yeah, she's related to, was it one of our local locals? Gainel Gompers.
And good old Sammy Gomps.
Yep. So relatives keep coming out of the woodwork unless you're related to me. With that being said,
Cass has no relatives. We created Cass in a lab. She's made out of sawdust and dreams and broken knees. I love that. I was going to make a Boulevard of Broken Dreams reference, and then I lost it. And that's our cue that this episode should probably be over. DM us. We love it. Leave us ratings and reviews. We love it. Go find us on Patreon. We talk about... I talk a lot more about Chicago. But if you tell me to talk about something else, I will. Tell me to talk about something from your own hometown. We hope you learned a lot and that you go save some history and share some history. Until next time.
Share you later.
And don't forget your knife boots.
Broadsheet Radio Network.